Welcome to the WTYKY podcast. I'm Virata in San Francisco. James is joining me on location in Ottawa. We flew him there.
That's right, Virata.
You're there in hurricane gear.
Yeah. So why did you call me?
Well, we're on iTunes after an absolutely maddening session of trying to understand what enclosing a link means. iTunes. So now we have an obligation to go out there to our 3 dozen subscribers and let them know that we're going to be there for you day in and day out.
That's right.
By day in and day out, I mean bi-monthly.
We are officially throwing our fedoras into the podcast ring.
So the preseason is taking its dying breath. I think it's done or will be done tomorrow. Ottawa beat the living hell out of Toronto twice. And back-to-back nights, then beat the living hell out of Montreal once.
Gang, gang, yep.
And then we had the living hell beaten out of us by New Jersey and Winnipeg. And so, James, do you take that trade every time?
I do. Yeah, of course I do. Because you get to experience both the raging yan and pacifying yin of the preseason where, you know, those first few games were like, I know it doesn't count, but like Toronto looks like dog shit and couldn't even beat a team with Nate Thompson as the first line center. And then when Mike Condon looks like a pile of puke, lets in 5 goals in the first period, you're like, well, it doesn't count. I know I derided New Jersey for being terrible all off season, but you know, the fact that our veterans couldn't beat them doesn't quite count.
What I've enjoyed the most about it is hopscotching between prospects that we can be absolutely unreasonably excited for. So going into it, we all know we're excited for Shabbat and White and Brown, and then White gets hurt and we just, you know, effortlessly jump to being excited about Brown, and then maybe he goes a little silent, and so and suddenly it's is it pronounced Formenton or Formenton?
I think it's Formentos.
Formentos. Get, you know, he's there for us. He's there to score a timely goal in a loss. And suddenly we're like, this guy's going to score 35 goals this year. You know, like it's really the preseason is just like a canvas onto which to paint all of our complexes and like deepest desires. And it was really satisfying in that way.
I went to a movie on Monday. That's right. Even wait till Tuesday. And, you know, I turned off my mobile device during the movie like a gentleman. And afterward, I flipped my phone on. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna check in on that New Jersey-Ottawa game. And I saw it's 8-1. And I wanted to see which goalie, because obviously at least 2 goalies played in that game, which one did worse. But as I was scrolling down, I saw the one goal of the game was scored by Thomas Chabot. And I was like, yeah, well, I'll take that. It's like the only time you can be chill about an 8-1 loss to New Jersey.
Plus, that was that Kraft Hockeyville game where, you know, I just feel good for the citizens of whatever city that which game was being played in.
O'Leary?
It's always was it a Maritime province?
It was O'Leary, Prince Edward Island.
Right. Okay. So I don't remember. I never remember the distinction between Maritime provinces and Atlantic provinces. But it feels to me like the Kraft Hockeyville usually takes place in what we would call a rural city, and what in Atlantic Canada would be an urban city. And right. And I'm just excited that they got to see something that felt really consequential, which is Ottawa just getting absolutely destroyed by the team that picked first overall last year. I'm just glad that the small but vocal and passionate subsection of the PEI population who are really into Swiss hockey could see Nico Hischier play such a solid game.
You can always say that. You saw him at the very beginning.
So we also wanted to talk about the Wayne Gretzky of hitting, Mark Bobieski. Actual article written by Tyler Dello on The Athletic. I'm not throwing shade. That's an actual article. Mark Bobieski was the Wayne Gretzky of hitting, or he had a season that would cause a professional hockey writer to write that. So we tend to think of Guy Boucher as operating on some kind of next level, like 4D chess approach to hockey. And we've noticed, we can't help but notice, that Mark Bobieski, official, like, not very good player of hockey, has wormed his way into Boucher's system. How do you account for this? Do you have thoughts about why Bobieski has, like, just such utter traction with everybody who runs Ottawa hockey teams?
Spotlight, please. So I liked the way that Guy Boucher used Mark Bobieski last season. I thought that, you know, if you're going to have Mark Bobieski on your team, the way he dealt with it was pretty smart. He's one of those players that's just like a golden retriever. Like, he just wants to do a good job for you and, like, you to pat him on his big head, you know. I mean, this is a bad analogy because Mark Bobieski looks like a ninja turtle, not a dog, but I noticed for the first time since he's been a regular on the team, Bobieski would just constantly line up the attacking forward with the puck on the half wall entering the zone and just, like, wallpaper him to separate him from the puck, and like Zach Smith or whoever would be waiting to scoop up the puck and skate the other way. And I was like, this is workable. I like this. And I felt like it was like, that's just constantly what he would be doing. You know, like, if you're going to have kind of a marginally useful player, make them know what they're supposed to be doing, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I found with Cameron and Paul McLean as well, I think they saw that they had, you know, whatever, the Wayne Gretzky of hitting on the team. And they were just like, you know, like, go out there and keep him honest or whatever. And that's when you get the, like, yakety sacks Mark Bobieski, who is back, by the way, in the preseason. I'm not going to go too hard about, like, preseason. But I just felt like he was just trying to hit everything in the world the last couple of years. And then last year, he was hitting effectively. I mean, I don't know what the possession stats are. Like, I'm sure they're terrible because he's the, you know, seventh defenseman on the team. Like, I don't expect him to be amazing or anything. But that said, the thing that really boggles my mind is how Pierre Dorion seems to be fine publicly discussing, like, oh, we're looking to extend Mark Bobieski. I'm like, the team's depth is finally in defense, and you want to tie up this dude? Like, what has he done to earn an extended term on the third pairing?
Yeah, so the thrust of the Dello article was really that, you know, looking at his hit rate and knowing that tracking hitting is always, like, notoriously inaccurate. It's always, like, some homer in the home arena who...
Right.
Just always, you know, I think the classic example is Cal Clutterbuck gets, you know, just a ridiculous attribution rate for hits. But even keeping in mind, like, this huge standard deviation, Bobieski just had this ridiculous season for hit rates, which, you know, to Dello's credit, he doesn't really conclude, okay, this is a good thing or a bad thing. He's just like, this is a weird thing. Like, that, yeah. Somebody would be given, it's kind of this combination of, like, him having a very defined play style and also the coaching staff giving him all the room to do this one thing. Like, the expectation is you're going to go out there, you're going to have very limited shifts because you're a third pairing defenseman, and it's your job to get, like, four hits a shift and then come back to the bench.
Yeah.
And he's not expected to, like, advance the puck up the ice. He's not expected to possess the puck at all or make any kind of plays. His job is to go out and throw a few hits. And what's interesting about that is that, you know, the Sens have not been a good possession team in the last couple of years. They weren't good last year. They had pretty bad...
Can you be a good possession team? I always wonder about that. Like, if you kind of play on your heels, are you ever going to be a good possession team? It's kind of hard to say.
Well, I guess it's a chicken or the egg thing. Are you playing on your heels because you're a bad possession team, or are you a bad possession team because you're playing on your heels? You know, like, there's a lot of situation specific things that I think cause bad possession, but then I think also terminally having bad possession creates bad scenarios.
Sure.
But one of the interesting things that I think that the Dello article, like, it leads to a bunch of interesting follow-up questions, which is like, does Boro hitting people a lot make them not shoot good? You know, it's like a really dumb way of putting it. You know, there's this idea that, okay, you chase a guy into the corner and you throw a hit, and you're going to throw the puck in and chase after it and make the guy pay the price to retrieve it. And yeah, that was like an old way of, you know, people don't really believe in that style of hockey anymore, but it seems like there's still this sense of, if you're making the other team pay the price over the course of a game, it's going to start manifesting in mistakes. I don't know how reliable that is, or if that's just like a dumb philosophy you resort to when you don't have as talented a team as the other team. I don't really know. But then the other thing that I think is interesting about Borowiecki, I think you're right. He's super comfortable with having an incredibly limited role.
Yeah.
And what he does, you can have him do on a line of other players who are depth players. So you can put him on a line with like Zach Smith or like Chris Kelly or whoever, and he knows exactly what he needs to do so that a team of other minimally talented depth players can either wear down the other team or hopefully be defensively sound. I think that's the theory behind it, but you're absolutely right. It's weird to have like Pierre Dorion being like, you know, the only player here whose position is like absolutely safe is this guy who by like every modern barometer is like not a very good hockey player.
He tends to sidestep a lot of criticism, which I think frustrates a lot of fans. We can give him the title of Wayne Gretzky of hitting, that's fine, but he's not a tremendous defensive player, and he's an atrocious offensive player. I think he's had 5 points in his last 2 years. Like, we're talking like low double digits, like NHL points total, and he puts up a 100+ penalty minutes a year for some fucking reason is valued. Like, penalties are gonna happen, but like outside of a fantasy league, like I would never know why like Guy Boucher would value like 154 penalty minutes. Like, this guy put us at a disadvantage more than anyone else in the league last year. Like, yeah, he doesn't play a lot. He's a minus player, if you care about that kind of thing. Like, I have no idea why he wouldn't elicit the coolest of takes from both the coaching staff and the GM. Whereas, like, you know, a player like Mike Hoffman over the years has taken a lot of like, well, we're going to see how things play out with him, or,
you
know, he's not very good in his own end. It's like, well, Mark Borowiecki's only good at hitting, you know, like he's not good offensively or defensively. Like, what is the reward? Like, he already makes more than Johnny Oduya, which is fucking amazing. Like, you kind of can't knock this guy's hustle. Like, I wonder if his dad's like the Walter Gretzky of hitting and just like had a backyard pond and was like making his son hit like these crash test dummies. And like, my son's going to make over $1 million doing this one day.
You just had him run into trees over and over again. Yeah, I don't want to use the word intangibles because I know it causes some segments of the Sens Twitter sphere to black out and then like wake up in a field 3 days later. But
sure.
If there, my one takeaway from this is, if like Curtis Lazar, who is like actually birthed from like the mating of two intangibles, like, you know, he's like pure character player. If he had just learned how to hit more, yeah, I feel like they would have extended Lazar.
To what you were saying earlier about just like never letting off the opposition the entire game, like, yes, intimidation is a factor. Is it a huge factor in the NHL level? No. You know, because everyone's a professional at this point, like they've kind of seen it all. You can intimidate someone into going into the corner and like take one in the lower back like every single time. Sure. Is it worth like having the worst player on the team locked up for years going forward? Like, Dion Phaneuf is that, right? Like, watching him live in the playoffs, it was so satisfying. Like, when you're not watching through the TV camera. Do you like that I had to specify that it's a TV camera? I was watching through my Nikon Coolpix. No, but you see him going to the corner, and he just, like, every fucking time, cross check in the lower back, or like face wash, or just like whack in the leg, like just every time. And you just think, this is how this guy like has made his bread and butter in the NHL. Like, he's just the worst to play against. Also, he puts up like 30 points a year. Like, you can put Dion Phaneuf on the power play, yeah, like, if you want. Like,
well, this is also the team that traded for and then immediately extended Alex Burrows. So we know that they welcome that particular contribution to the club culture. So we should talk about this Anderson deal, which I don't know about you, but for me, this, I knew they wanted to extend him, but they really, this came out of left field for me today. I had no idea that they were actively negotiating with him and that they were going to launch this deal on the eve of the regular season opening.
Yeah.
But I think it's like he makes about $5 million 1 year, $4 million the next year, something like that. It's like a 4.5 average.
4.75.
So, like, for a goaltender who has always taken under market, it feels like every team has been settling on him while they wait for their true starter to come along, and he's been providing them with at least league average numbers, usually better, and is, like, now the unassailable, like, franchise goaltender. Historically, for Ottawa, he's played the most games. He has the most wins. You know, I think he overtook Patrick Laine in terms of like all the franchise milestones for goaltenders. And he re-signs for about $5 million for a starting goaltender. I'm kind of amazed that this happened. I'm kind of amazed that after the Mike Condon contract, that Craig Anderson got this little. It's an amazing contract, even though he's an older goaltender. You know, everyone's happy with the Anderson contract when the type of discussion it produces is more discussion about the Condon contract.
Yeah.
Like, Dorian came out and said, now we have a 1A and 1B goaltender, which to me, that's like a slap in the face. Well, so Condon's a 3-year deal, right? And then Anderson has a year left on his deal, and they extended him for 2 more. So they line up kind of perfectly, and I think he's got this conception that one of them is going to share the workload, but if Anderson regresses with age, Condon is going to be available to take on more and more workload, which to me feels like a little bit of a slap in the face to Anderson, who has this like amazing body of work at this point. And Condon's, you know, like, he had a good run last season, but his overall numbers weren't that great and his career numbers aren't that great. So assuming that they have a 1A and 1B, like, Condon's comparable to Anderson doesn't feel right to me.
You know that Mike Condon played 40 games last year?
Yeah, and he played a lot of games in a row.
That contract is pretty ambitious. Wasn't the third year part of, like, keeping him away from Toronto, though?
I can't remember which division rival was going after him.
Well, I'm going to guess it was Toronto.
Yeah, I think Toronto was taking a close look, and you never know if they're doing this like aggressive look in order to try and bid up a division rival. I mean, I know Toronto.
I mean, I can't.
They've got their starter.
Toronto's backup goalie is, but you know.
Yeah, neither can I. I mean, I know that they've got their starter locked up for several years now. So if they had gone after Condon, it would have been as a backup. I think with goaltenders, you look at the who's in the pipeline. Matt McConnell didn't really work out. College guy that he signed.
Oh, Matt O'Connor.
Yo. Who did I say? Did I say Mitch McConnell? O'Connor.
Mitch McConnell's playing in Peoria this year.
He's with the Everblades.
The Solar Bears. The climate change denier Bears.
And so Hogberg is sort of in the pipeline. I don't know, is Dreiger still around? Is he down in Belleville?
He is. The guy I'm sort of interested in is Danny Taylor.
Is he a draft pick? Or did they sign
him? No, he
He's the guy who's like, he's experienced, right? They brought him in for Belleville.
He's Danny Taylor. He's from England, and he has been tearing the KHL a new ass for a couple of years. Which is, you know, like, the KHL is a very respectable semi-pro league. And the thing that is most striking about his KHL numbers, like last year he was playing for Novosibirsk. he played 29 games and put up a 940 save percentage, which is especially impressive considering they don't play defense in that league. So
he played for, actually now I'm recalling that there was a piece about him after he signed, and he played for like four different KHL teams in 4 years. One of them I think was a Siberian team.
Yeah, that sounds right considering I like can't say some of these team names. But yeah, his KHL numbers are quite good. I can't tell if he's a starter or what. I don't know how many games they play per year, but 930, 940, 924 save percentage here. Like last year he was .175 goals against. Like he was kind of this weird signing that Pierre Dorion seemed surprisingly excited about, because he was talking about how he was really disappointed in the goaltending in the AHL last year, and rightly so. Like, I mean, Matt O'Connor has gone back to Yale or whatever and is going to become a, you know, investment banker. I think this guy's kind of a proven commodity. He's 31, and they have Drieger still. And then Hogberg is going to play in the ECHL, apparently. 2 o'clock, I got no money in war, with a brain that's keeping one eye open. Play to the vacuum that your nature abhors. You're like me, you're like me. No elbows, even if you open the door. You won't sleep, even if part of you's open. Afraid that you won't have control anymore. You're like me.
Anything else you want to get to before we sign off?
I did want to talk about our J.D. Power and Associates Award.
For the Draglum Salts marketing campaign?
Yeah. The people have spoken. I did want to talk a little bit about prospects. Well, that sounded bad, but are we overvaluing Brown and Shabbat, or like, are we fucking due for a first round pick to be an impact player for the first time in what feels like almost a decade?
Well, I'm always going to remember the summer I got burnt by like completely buying into the Brandon Boshensky wave.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, he played with Spezza or whatever, and he had, I don't know, I think he had a 4-goal game or something ridiculous, but he had something insane in the preseason. And I remember it's pretty much the only time I've ever found myself agreeing with Don Cherry, where like short, you know, a quarter of the way through the season, Boshensky's not getting ice time anymore. And Don Cherry goes on some long rant about how great he was in the preseason. And I found myself saying, yeah, I don't really understand why you give up on a guy who shows that much promise that early. I mean, I know it's the preseason, and a lot of that was probably attributable to like playing with Spezza. And then Boshensky ends up in Boston, and then he just disappears and he's gone forever. It's kind of like a little bit of a Peter Schaefer thing, you know, like a really promising player who you always kind of expect a little bit more from.
Yeah.
But at least with Peter Schaefer, he had like his role. He was on that great line with Havlat, and he was an along the boards type of guy. Yeah. With Brandon Boshensky, you were just kind of like, this is our power forward. This is the guy we're going to have for years to come. And then like 6 months later, it's like he never existed. So yeah. I do think expectations are a little high. You know, maybe White getting hurt in the long run will be a way to manage expectations.
Yeah.
Brown looked good. I feel like we kind of pivoted to Brown after like Shabbat didn't set the world on fire in preseason. He looked great, but
I thought he looked great.
Yeah, he looked fantastic, but he wasn't like, you know, world junior MVP or whatever, because he's playing against NHL players. And then,
Brown. Gotta hear both sides. He did play against the New Jersey Devils.
That's true. That's true. But I do think, you know, there's a little bit of, preseason hype that we're applying to the first rounders, which is a really natural thing to happen.
Yeah, I remember when preseason Darren Kramer was like doing numbers, like no one even getting excited about it. Just like, yeah, Darren Kramer is going to get arrested at Disney World, which he did, by the way. But yeah, the difference too, like it always gets brought up, like Brendan Bocanski. But the difference there is like that dude was like a seventh round pick that like, you know, would do well in the preseason and then not do shit at the NHL level, basically. But or like Phil Verone or Veroni, or he was like the guy who was kind of lighting it up last preseason. But I kind of like watching the way he plays a little bit. You're kind of like, yeah, Logan Brown's, you know, having his little preseason. Also, though, he's like a first round pick, though. Like, 11th overall, like this, we knew this guy was supposed to be looking good going in, and he is, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a, you know, is this guy trying the hardest so he gets a 9-game audition and gets some bonus kicks in on his contract or whatever? I actually thought White was the quietest of the prospects in the preseason, and if two prospects are going to look good, make it, you know, your last couple years first rounders. And the fermenting kid looks good too.
Well,
but he's 18.
You got to love seeing your prize prospect blocking a shot in the final minutes of a preseason game that's out of reach. In a preseason route and breaking his wrist or hand or whatever. That's what really makes you question why we watch the sport at all.
But, you know, aside from CeCe, who I would call, like, you know, I call him an NHL player, but it's been since Carlson, since the Sens have picked up an impact player in the first round. You know, we're getting on to a decade-long first-round pick like turning into something nice.
We're due for one of these late round picks to just be like a really nice return on a smart pick.
Yeah, like as much as I love the thinking person's Mark Stone type, like, oh, he got mono, like they took him late knowing his numbers had dipped or like, yeah, how about we just also have like a first round pick, like a 6'6" centerman who's like amazing on the boards, like just actually transition. Like nothing pisses me off more than when you hear like, oh, you know, the Penguins just continue to have a bunch of promising kids on the way. Like, what are they picking, like 34th? Anyway, what I'm saying is Sens rule, all them other teams stink. We deserve a first-round pick to work out, or else.
Yeah.
I also want to announce Ray Moore and Flanagan's Columbus Day sale, where the entire store will be marked down.